Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlin Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Sit in with Aphasia and Babbler on Thursday morning as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. Break on through with Pam on Fridays, and join Dex and Pam on Saturday as they bring you Once Upon a Time. And then every other Sunday, join Arcana as he goes delving deep into the darkness. These shows are designed so that you can call outside the lines with ritual emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Well, hello there, Rex. How's it going?
All right, see?
All right. Very cool. Yeah, so how's the weather treating you?
Mid-90s.
Oh, geez, that's too hot. Too damn hot. But I suppose it could be worse.
It's not too bad. It is what it is.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, our temperatures aren't really hot. We just have a lot of humidity. But now Jeremy has me thinking about sherbets and Italian ices and ice cream. So now I'm hungry.
Oh. Raspberry sherbet is good, but if you can do an Italian ice, it's got to be grape.
Very few grape things do I actually like the flavor of.
Well, as far as orange, Jeremy, you can go with melange.
Yeah, I could be liking orange.
You can go with Nerfle for the purple.
Robbie says not to get him hungry because it's midnight. Apparently, Robbie is one of those little mogwai creatures. So... And we're not allowed to feed him after midnight. But, I see Randy, and I see Jeremy, and I see Robbie on the board. Good to see them all. And very cool. And speaking of Randy, I'm going to go ahead and bring him on. So welcome, Randy. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Doing very well. It's a toasty 98 degrees here today. It's fairly humid, but managed to survive it. So glad to be here with you folks tonight.
Excellent. How you doing, Randy?
Pretty good. How about you, Rick?
All right. Same on the weather angle, so I know about the heat. Well, Pam, why don't we kick things into gear and see what we got?
Sure, no problem. All right. Well, up first, we have your poem, Randy. So go ahead, and when you see it, give it a read for us.
Okay, it's Big Dogs. Survival of the fittest is the law of the jungle, conquered by the bravest and rarely by the humble. We'll always step up like an alpha, not a beta. This popular conclusion, according to the data. It's a tough world, very hard to catch a break. Many believe you'll only get what you take. This may seem cynical, but just look around. Strive to be the wolf, not some baying hound. Take stamina and strength to lead the pack, and never backing down, always on the attack, with an ironclad will, a dogged determination, nose to the ground, toward their destination, and only stopping to mark out their territory, because all the big dogs write their own story, proudly lifting their leg on each chosen tree, growling at those who stop and squat to pee. End poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. And you took "You Can't Pee Like a Puppy If You Want to Run with the Big Dogs." All right, Pam, what do you got?
Well, first of all, that picture that's attached to the poem, oh, my goodness gracious, do I feel for that one dog? But I know that's the way it works. You know, sometimes the betas just have to be put in their place. Yeah, this has great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. It was an excellent take on the prompt. And I like how it speaks on the idea of, you know, being one of the big dogs and speaking up or standing up for what's rightfully yours, you know, not backing down, you know, not putting up with other people's foolishness. Those end lines really wrapped it up nicely, proudly lifting their and only stopping to mark out their territory because all the big dogs write their own story, proudly lifting their leg on each chosen tree, growling at those who stop and squat to pee. And, you know, I like the whole thought of when you used where you said write their own story. It actually kind of reminded me of a conversation from another show where we were talking about the idea of having control over your own destiny, over your own story. And, you know, and I like that because it's saying, you know, I don't let anybody else have a say over the decisions I make that affect my life. You know, I think for myself, I act for myself. I know what is rightfully mine, and I'm going to stand up for it. You've definitely captured the alpha dog attitude, and very cool, right?
Thanks, Pam.
Nice. I too like that picture. It's quite the thought. It reminds me of the chimpanzee cages. You'll always have that one that's the big dog, and the other ones in supplication. If they want to do something, they have to offer up an upturned palm, whereas the leader, the big dog in that mix, will brush his fingers over the top, saying yes, getting that note as a thank you for honoring me as the top dog, and yes, you are welcome as part of the group itself. So I like that touch, but I also like this. It offers up the truth of the jungle itself, but it also walks that metaphorical line of this speaks to humans quite the same way. It's always the alphas. The betas might run up a good game, but they always fall away as the alpha takes control, and they do write their own destiny, their own story. So I like it on both angles, literal and metaphorical. So well done, Randy.
Thanks, Rick.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we've learned from the animals. I mean, mankind.
Oh, have you?
We have our own hierarchy in humanity and throughout our society as well. So there's no difference. It's just the way we play it out.
Absolutely. Considering, well, our brains went a little further than theirs. So, yes, but the animal in it still holds that note of truth when it comes to structure. All right, Pam, where do you want to go next?
All right. Well, let's see here. Up next, we have I'll Come Home, or hold on, let me click on this. I'll Come For You by Sam Sampson. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
All righty. I'll Come for You by Sam Simpson. The devil, he came a-calling, said my time was due. I just laughed a hearty laugh. I said, the joke's on you. He wanted me to sell my soul, and I would gladly sell it, but there's just one little problem. I guess I lost it long ago when I was, oh, so young. My life was filled with hardship, pain from when it first begun. So sit back, devil, on your throne, and just you wait and see. For when I die, I'll come for you and take that throne from me. End poem. I like that one. And Sam took Selling My Soul would be a lot easier if I could find it. Let's start with you, Randy. What'd you think?
Yes, I thought it was a very clever write. In fact, I excuse me, I made mention of it to Sam as well. A clever write, Sam, turning the table on the devil with a claim of lacking a soul, but looking forward to taking the throne one day. Yeah, it cleverly written and a very nice answer to the prompt. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Randy. Pam, how about you? You're mutating. Pam? Huh. I think she just left us. All right, I guess I'm going to be done with this one. All right. I like the ease that this one walks in. It opens up to that notation of not being able to find his soul. So he's already gravitated to the darker end of things, and he's accepted himself on that note. And then bites at the devil for trying to take what he admits he doesn't have anyway, or at least he can't find it, and says, hey, when it's my time, I'll be taking what's yours, because I might give the devil his due, but the devil's going to give me mine in return. So I like that thought, Sam. Thank you very much. And Sam, you back?
I thought of Charlie Daniels' song, The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yes. I do like that song. Yes, Pam, you're back?
I am back. Yes, I am. And I thought this was a great write by Sam Sampson. I had read it earlier. It had another one that had great rhyme. You know, I don't know what it was. There's something about this contest, I think, but it might have been because the prompts were from a musician. But I noticed there seemed to be more rhyming poems than usual, which was nice. You know, nice change of pace. I thought this was a great story write, and I liked your guys' observation on how it kind of like made you think of the song The Devil Went Down to Georgia, which is absolutely one of the all-time coolest songs. I like this all the way through, particularly that end stanza. So sit back, devil, on your throne, and just you wait and see. For when I die, I'll come for you and take the throne for me. You know, it actually, that end stanza makes me think of the show Supernatural, and how there was always that fight over who would rule the throne of hell. So that was a nice touch there. And you know, just a really great mythological write on the whole idea of what is, you know, the devil going to take if there's nothing left. So wonderful write and very well done.
Where shall we go next?
All right. Up next, we have Falling to My Demon by Jenny the Deep. Demons chasing me, hiding, avoiding. Jade coals burn my feet, excruciating. searching for my soul, but lo and behold, with nowhere to go, life turns beautiful. Nothing else to lose, already lost you. Might as well give up, won't fear the reaper. Dangerously close, now out of control. Lived wasting alone, it's time to let go. Fell too far to save, damaged and ashamed. Nothing else to say, come take me away. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Randy, what do you think?
Yeah, this, excuse me, of course, is written along a very sad line, going from the demons chasing me away, hiding, avoiding. J. Cole's burned my feet, excruciating, searching for my soul. Another one here, searching for the soul. But lo and behold, with nowhere to go, life turns beautiful. And then, obviously, it goes down to where they have lost someone, and it's a sadness, and there's lived wasting alone, time to let go, fell too far to save, damaged and ashamed, nothing else to say, come take me away. It was a sad poem, but very well written, and it flowed from beginning and very well, so I liked it.
All right. Thank you, Randy. And Pam, what about you?
Yeah, there definitely was a sadness to it. I really like that she wrote this in the quatrain form with five syllables each line. I thought that gave it a really nice, smooth, polished feel. I thought it was a wonderful write on the whole idea of a life that has spiraled out of control and hit rock bottom. I did like the reference to Won't Fear the Reaper, from the song. I thought that was pretty cool. That was a great line. Nothing else to lose. Already lost you. Might as well give up. Won't fear the Reaper. And the thing with that stands with, might as well, already lost you, might as well give up. It's the whole idea that when you put all your happiness into one person or one thought, that when you lose that, you feel like your whole world has fallen apart. And at that point, you don't even have a solid footing anymore. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I'm going to go with a mirror image, because that line in the third stanza, the last one, Won't Fear the Reaper, is indicative. It goes with the song, Don't Fear the Reaper. I think Don Rosa wrote that. It's a love song for his wife, because he was having heart problems at the time, and there was that thought that he might not make it to any kind of age, let alone a ripe old age. But they figured out some drug he could take that would help him out on that level. So it was the idea of that song was telling his wife, don't fear the reaper, we'll meet on the other side. There's a note to Romeo and Juliet in there too. So this kind of hits on that note of the back end, the mirror image to that song, by saying, well, you have gone, now it's my time to join you on the other side. Maybe even walking that line of being reckless, because dangerously close, now out of control, lived wasting alone, it's time to let go. Fell too far to save, damaged and ashamed, nothing else to say, come take me away, as well as that note to Won't Fear the Reaper. So I like that thought, Jenny. Thank you very much. All right. Back to you.
All right. Well, up next, we have Lost in the Rubble by Bob Uppington, 22. And go ahead, please, Randy, and give us a better read for us, please.
All right. Lost in the Rubble. Boxing Day tsunami, debris of fishermen shacks, sea spewed vomit, jetsam, bric-a-brac, a broken ganache. My sad souvenir, The corpses choked by sand, if the great waves didn't kill them. Said the village woman, before 40 big-eyed children danced and sang Lanka nursery rhymes. Now some devil snatched their unblemished souls at wholesale price, the seller. Your God, you know the one. He parted the Red Sea, sun walks on water. My soul lost somewhere in this rubble. In poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. What do you think?
Oh, great read there, Randy. I like this one because I think it speaks to me on the existential crisis that many people face when it comes to watching good and innocent people suffer through natural events. And it also brings up the idea of the thought between, you know, free will and divine intervention. And I think it is a difficult thing to watch a people, especially people you know, people you love, be destroyed by natural events. And at that time, you question not only the purpose, you know, of a higher power, but, you know, where you feel about how you feel about it. And I think there's a sadness and an anger that comes through in this, and it's got a real raw feel to it. Really powerful imagery. The corpses choked by sand. The great wave didn't kill them, said the village woman. A week before, 40 big-eyed children danced and sang Lanka nursery rhyme. You know, and you know, I feel this poem. I do. It's powerful imagery and metaphors, and an excellent write on the sadness felt by the destruction of good people. And, you know, so very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Tim. And Randy, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this was, like Tim said, this was a sad, a sad poem. And a very touching one, too. I mean, it takes us right from, you know, Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, a tsunami, obviously wipes out this village, farmer shacks, despewed vomit, jetsam, bric-a-brac, broken ganache, my sad souvenir, corpses choked by sand, if giant waves didn't kill them. I mean, you know, that just paints a horrible scene right off the bat. And then it just continues on. And the writer bearing their soul about, like what Pam said about people bemoaning the fact that how could these things happen to, like, innocent children and good people? How do they suffer and why? And there's nobody ever has a real good answer for it. And, you know, when people end up blaming God because they have nowhere else to go, because it's such a devastating thought and never answer with anything close to a rewarding answer at all. So, you know, that's the thing. Without faith, and even with faith, you can't explain it sometimes. So it's a very overwhelming thought, and we see a lot of it now. I mean, you go from the fires in Maui to the devastation floods in Southern California. We can't find reasons for these, so we have to speculate. And I think that this poem drew that out very well. I thought it was very well written.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Randy. There is, with those last two lines, it does hit on that note of the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. Someone who's been around long enough to see many things that walk along the edge of, should we believe? as opposed to I do believe, because he does sit on that note. A week before, 40 big-eyed children danced and sang Lanka nursery rhyme. Now some devil snatched their unblemished souls at wholesale price. The seller? Your God. There's always that note to, that was the last straw. Your God, he's not mine anymore. You know the one. He parted the Red Sea, sun walked on water. My soul? Lost somewhere in the rubble. And that note, somewhere in the rubble, speaks to this this very situation at being that last note of can't take this anymore. There has to be something else at hand rather than an absentee father, so to speak. So thank you very much, Bob. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Gimme Free Somnambulist, Leanne, the Queen of Altitude by Jim Bellamy. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Gimme Free Somnambulist, Leanne, the Queen of Altitudes by Jim Bellamy. Gimme Free Somnambulist, Leanne, the Queen of Altitudes. I was sick and tired of everything. Called you last night from the farthest hillocks where candy merchants glow. All I do is feeding adders and milking mad hens and using evening bodies, wishing pots of petals. Gimme, gimme, gimme free somnambulist. Won't somebody help me feed carbs to robins? Gimme, gimme, gimme free somnambulist. I really want to feed carbs to robins. Leanne, the Queen of Acritudes, I was defeated. You won the war. Leanne, the Queen of Acritudes, promised to love me forevermore. Leanne, the Queen of Acritudes, couldn't escape if I wanted to. Leanne, the Queen of Acritudes, knowing my fate is to be with you. Lu, 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 lu. Oh, lu, 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 lu. Leanne, the Queen of Acritudes, finally facing Leanne, the Queen of Acritudes. You are the soldier spinning radical kingsmen here in the father's hillocks, where candy merchants flow. Soldier spinning radical kingsmen feel the beat from the tambourine. You can feed cars to robins. You can feed cars to robins, having the time of your life. Gimme, gimme, gimme free somnambulist. Won't somebody help me feed cars to robins? And poem. All right, Pam, you got to kick us off.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Great read there, Rex. Definitely an intriguing and clever write. You know, the great use of repetition. The gimme, gimme, gimme really has a very frantic quality to it. It speaks to me, the write speaks to me, the main idea and the idea of addiction and wanting those, that right combination of drugs that will take you to that land of dreams, will take you away from reality, the begging for that fix. I thought it had amazing imagery and metaphors. I found I like the thought of, you know, you can feed cars to robins, you can feed cars to robins, having the time of your life. I feel like feed cars to robins is the idea of feeling as if you can do the impossible. You know, like the idea that there is no border of reality. Like all those borders have faded and everything has become a reality. And it definitely has a very Alice in Wonderland acid trip type vibe to it. I also like Soldier Spinning Radical Kingsman, Feel the Beat from the Tambourine. You know, the whole Bob Dylan, Mr. Tambourine Man, and the Soldier Spinning Radical Kingsman actually feels like a reference to the nursery rhyme, Humpty Dumpty Sat on a Wall, you know, and the idea that that was a reference to a canon that was used back in those days. So, really an interesting write, and So I very much enjoyed it. Very well done.
Thank you, Tam. And Randy, how about you?
Oh, Randy had to go.
Oh, thank you, Tam. All right. Somnambulist. And Leanne, the queen of acritudes. And the acritudes is bitterness, bitter taste. And he, and Jim took the prompt. What was it? Oh, damn it. Now I can dummy. It was number 7, which was there's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way home. So I think the idea was from a, because he does hit on a couple. When I called you last night from the Father's Hillocks by Candy Merchant's Flow, all I do is feeding adders and milking mad hens and using evening bodies, wishing pots of petals. There's a deeper meaning in the idea of this with those with that angle. It's kind of a praying on it kind of gives me the thought of praying on children, candy merchants, using evening bodies, wishing pots of petals, petals being something tender, and the free somnambulists, the awakened ones. And let me see. I was defeated, you won the war, promised to love me forevermore, couldn't escape if I wanted to, knowing my fate is to be with you. He's given in to a darker sense of a self, and the thought of the robins and cars. When it was, you can feed cars to robins, you can feed cars to robins, having the time of your life. An idea of feeding cars to robins, so on the thought of a bird, not just the bird itself, but birds representing women. You can feed cars to robins. The idea of, hey, you know what? I'll buy you a car as long as you delve into that which I've got a mind to, so to speak. I think this might walk a deeper touch of sanity, so to speak.
Huh, interesting. So how do the free sleepwalkers fit in with that?
From the idea of maybe the, what's it, what do I call them? The hangers-ons, the ones that are always there. They call them, gosh, I forget what they call them. It's kind of you're sleepwalking through life, so to speak, in those moments.
But, well, certainly there are plenty of people that do that.
Yeah, but you don't really remember the act of what you're doing unless something really happens in the moment.
Right, right. No, I've seen people sleepwalk before.
Well, no, but this the sleepwalking isn't a literality. It's a metaphor from just easily gliding through, taking what you want.
You're not listening to me.
Yeah. Hello?
Go ahead, continue.
Brings the references to those who easily walk through life as if they were sleeping, taking what they want at their will without any consequence on the back end.
Okay. Well, just so you know, I didn't really think it was literally about sleepwalkers. You're the one that brought up sleepwalking literally. That's why I responded to you.
Okay.
I did.
Getting to the next one.
All right. Well, up next we have Stumbling Home by Betty Page. Bright neon rainbows, drinking Jack Daniel's whiskey, dancing on sunset, rebelliously sweet, erotic Tropicanas, find Mai Tai goddess, shimmers and glitter, smeared cherry red lipstick's kiss, stumbling in heels, jumped right off the edge, swiftly walked right past the ledge. I'll keep on walking, diving in snow white, lost numb in my fairy tales, bit your tainted fruit. Juicy red apples, California's sweetest orange, livid beyond my dream, floating on ceilings, drifting on sticky sweet clouds, vivid ecstasy, pure liquid starlight, intoxicated midnight, crashing moonlit waves, sparkles as diamonds, aquamarine clear daydreams, reflecting mirrors, haunting decadence, wickedly tainting within, tumbling with waves, going for a ride, sapphire blue till twilight, carnivals of love, merry-go-rounds bite, vampire's fangs pierce in deep. I'm dripping sweetly beneath the boardwalk, partying after hours, tore up half-naked, splattering crimson, razor-sharp, medicated, high on heroin, craving your madness, desires dripping so wet, shaking, need a fix, quench my thirst, for I'm wandering across your flesh, finding my way home. End poem.
And Betty also took that prompt, there's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way home. And kind of hit on that idea of not just the blood itself, but the excess and addictive qualities, the Jack Daniel's whiskey, the Mai Tai. We're also got hits on the idea of stumbling in heels, jumped right off the edge, swiftly walked right past the ledge, I'll keep on walking. But then finding what she's looking for, the juicy red apple of California's sweetest orange, vivid ecstasy, and the snow-white angle hits on the idea of cocaine. And then she rolls into the back end of this heroin, too. Craving your madness, desires dripping so wet, shaking, need a fix, quench my thirst, for I'm wandering across your flesh, finding my way home. Finding the way home is that fix in the moment, getting lit up again. But she does have, it's on a touch of even a bit of darkness in here. Merry-go-rounds bites, vampire's fangs pierced in deep. I'm dripping sweetly. That note of finding that that free-fall moment where everything's bliss right then. And it's, and you're in for the ride of your life, so to speak, at least for a few hours. So, thank you, Betty. And what about you?
All right. Well, I liked the 575 lines. They were very well done. You know, I found it actually really intriguing and interesting to write about such a chaotic lifestyle as looking for that constant fix, that can tie in such a strict format. There was a juxtaposition in the format of the poem and the content of the poem that worked really well. And it was almost, I could like picture us on this, following this person on their walk home as they're going from one high to the next. And at first it's just the alcohol and that's not enough. And then you need a little bit more high. So you get into the snow white, the cocaine, and those really great imagery and metaphors. Then we get into the sexual high, you know, the desire for that physical contact, that intoxication of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I really like going for a ride, sapphire blue till twilight, carnivals of love, merry-go-round bite, vampire's fangs piercing deep, I'm dripping sweetly. That merry-go-round, that makes me think of that movie, The Lost Boys. you know, where they're at the boardwalk and they're riding on the merry-go-round. And so I am one of my all-time favorite movies, but definitely an excellent write on the physical and emotional impact of addiction, and told basically almost in like one night. So very well done.
Where shall we go next?
Well, let's find out. Up next, we have Facing Demons of Reality by Darkened Auras. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read, please.
Facing Demons of Reality by Darkened Auras. It'd be easy to sell my soul if it was something I could find. The argument we got into tonight left me in quite a bind. She screamed and swore and chewed me out, had no clue what she was going on about. Finally, take any more, hearing her nag became such a bore. Something snapped inside my brain, and I went all out, full-on insane. Our house looked like a murder scene. It kind of was, if you know what I mean. Drug her far out into a snowy forest home, nothing like a blood trail to lead me back home. Where to start with the cleaning? It's all such a mess. The truth's setting in now and causing distress. I didn't deal with my demons, and they got their payback. She had told me to stop drinking. Drinking caused the attack. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. Excellent, excellent dark write by Darkened Auras. Great rhyme and flow. She really brings out the blood, the gore, and the madness. I like the whole dark humor that is throughout this, you know, but especially where it says, oh, where was that? But I like how part here made me chuckle. Our house looked like a murder scene. It kind of was, if you know what I mean. And great use of the word biome. Drug her out into a snowy forest biome. Nothing like a blood trail to lead me back home. Yep. That blood would stand out very well on that white snow, which is why definitely any killer with any intelligence would make sure that the body was in something where the blood didn't leak. But, you know, I like this. I like how it's a psychological thriller, because you can see how this guy was pushed to his limit, how he snapped. And it's also like your basic classic, like, which I love, horror type, right, where there's the blood and the gore and, you know, the whole idea. Like, you can actually see, like, to me, I picture the guy sitting in the interrogation room being interrogated by the police and saying, you know what? I couldn't deal with anymore. I snapped. I didn't deal with my demons, and they got their payback. She had told me to stop drinking. Drinking caused the attack. You know, like, I'm going to blame the drinking. I'm going to blame, you know, her nagging. I'm going to blame anyone but myself. And the voice that Darkened Auras pulls off in this is just a wonderful combination of darkness and humor, or wit, I should say. It has a great wit to it. So, very well done.
It's a grim fairy tale with a dark moral to finish on it, because the first two stanzas, you don't get anything except the fact that there's some arguing going on. She screamed and swore and chewed me out, had no clue what she was going on about. And then finally, when I couldn't take any more, hearing her nag became such a bore, something snapped inside my brain, and I went all out, full on insane. And that's where the it takes a darker twist with some very wry and dry humor in it. The house looking like a murder scene, and then the offer, it was, if you know what I mean. And then I thought dragging around the snow. Nothing like a blood trail to lead back on. So she hit on a couple of the prompts itself, and the back end, the truth steps in. That's all that worry. Hey, yeah, there's a lot of stuff rolling around. There's blood, there's broken stuff, and then the admittance. Yeah, she told me to stop drinking, and drinking caused the attack. Well, when you go blood out crazy in the moment because all of your inhibitions have flown the coop, well, dark things happen. I like this. Thank you, DA. That was wonderful. All right, Pam. Back in.
All right. Up next, we have An Empty Vessel by Time Teller. I've been stuck in the middle of this and that, naive and thirsty like a broken car or a fucked up hairdo of a twat, stuck in the middle of what to do. The demons are not within me. They're running back and forth from you. If I try to pick a journey, either you or you will stamp my visa unapproved. And if I ignore your twisted training, I simply fall into the rut that happy people grooves. Stuck between two worlds, it seems the old is rejected by the new, yet I'm still troubled by your mixed signals. I wonder, if I were you, what would be my view? You're thinking you had it sorted, always with the testing. Your lack of belief was not worth my investing. You've had them illustrate time and again, and still you play the same old game. I'm not going to be your enthusiastic fool, stay around any longer just so you think you can believe. So I didn't behave exactly the way you thought, and you potentially reacted like snake out of sorts. You placed the demons that suited your choices and left me hollow, making loud, empty noises. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. There was a piece in this. Stuck in the middle of what to do. The demon is not within me. They're running back and forth from you. So there's a notation of someone, and it does hit on the idea. Oh, here it is. Stuck between two worlds. It seems the old is rejected by the new, yet I'm still troubled by your mixed signals. I wonder if I were you, what would be my view? Stuck between two worlds. Knowing one or the other, well, at least understanding one but not understanding the other, kind of paints that note of, let's hit on that, I'm still troubled with your mixed signals. So the relationship is walking the edge of two lines, and there's no real concerted effort to go one way or the other because you keep falling back and forth. It doesn't stand on its own as something that is, you get a kind one day and you get an evil the next, and you're left pondering the thought of, damn, if I were you, what would I be thinking about the other end of this? Because this is only going one way. And back says a lot. So I didn't exactly behave exactly the way you thought, and you passionately reacted like snake out of sorts. You placed the demons that suited your choices and left me hollow, making loud, empty noises. Screaming at the duplicity that's being exerted or imposed. What about you?
Well, first of all, I like those observations there, Rex. I really like this right all the way through. And I have to agree, there are definitely some twatish hairstyles out there for sure.
Wait a minute.
You know,
if I if I remember correctly, you go the Ricky Gervais angle. That's supposed to be twat.
Twat?
Yeah.
Huh. I've never heard it pronounced that way, but that works. That works. Splat the twat. It's kind of like that song. What is it? Something about jokers to the right of me, fools to the left, or something like that. And I'm stuck in the middle with you.
Steve Miller.
Yes. That is an awesome song. But yeah, when I read this poem, that song came to my mind. I thought this had great imagery and metaphors. It had hard-hitting lines. There was a raw, gritty honesty to it. I like what you said about being stuck between two worlds. I feel like it spoke to me on the idea of someone not being willing to bend to extremes of thinking just to please other people. And I feel like there's an individual level here, as you were mentioning, the idea of a relationship with the idea of mixed signals being sent. But there's also the idea, I think, on a group level. It says, if I try to pick a journey, either you or you will stamp my visa unapproved. It's that whole idea, no matter which way you choose to go, whatever decision you try to make about your life, parenting is a fine example of this. You know, there's always somebody who's got an opinion about something you're doing. Having a career, whatever, there's so many different decisions in life. And your own personal beliefs, your own personal thoughts on, society, on politics, religion, where you basically have to come to your own conclusions based on what you've learned. And people will always have on either side these naysayers who don't know your full story. You think you had it sorted always with the testing. Your lack of belief was not worth my investing. If you're not going to, and I like those lines because the whole idea of, if you're not going to see the truth and believe the truth when you're faced, when it's given to you, why should I waste my time? Definitely a great right on the whole idea of the hollow noises that people make when they're trying to prove a point, and the idea of just walking away from the chaos of it all. So very well done.
All right. Where are we traveling to now?
All right. Let's see here. All right. Up next, we have Way Back Home by Selena. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Stalk the night, looking for a fight. Vengeance is my goal. For I've been used, cruelly abused. Pure rage is in my soul. There's a fire in me, which yearns to be free. Screaming blood and hate. Though the more I kill, the more blood I spill, it never seems to abate. Men sent from hell with nobody to tell, and no one who even cared. Though some would plead, I had a gnawing need, no single one I spared. Some would cry about wives and beg for their lives. Some would curse. Some spit. Didn't give a hoot. I'd pull the trigger and shoot. Notch up and never hit. Then got in the car, dumped their bodies afar, singing, drunk and stoned. There's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way back home. Now I wait in the cell, still nobody to tell, turning the preacher away at the door. The one question I said before I am dead, what was I born for? He looked me in the eye, said, child, you're gonna die. Don't you want to be forgiven? Well, I've had my spree, so guess now I'll be free, cause I never had much living. Since I was a child, I've had to run wild. All I've known is depravity and shame. From 12 or a little more, used as a whore in men's seedy little game. No child should see the things I've seen, or be the things I've been. Sorry won't suffice, have to pay a high price, ain't nothing can wash my hands clean. Padre, guess you can tell I'm going to hell, no place for you in that pleasure dome. There's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way back home.
Great read, Delina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
Wow, that was just, as always with Delina, a brilliant read, great choice of background music. Really quite the performance. I really like how she takes us with this first-person narrative into the world of a woman who has seen and experienced some horrific stuff throughout her life since it's new, and the way it changed her. Great rhyme and flow, powerful line, and an amazing dark write on revenge sought for the wrongs done. And I really like it all the way through, but especially how she fit the quote in at the end and it flowed so smoothly with Padre, guess you can tell I'm going to hell, no place for you in that pleasure dome. There's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way back home. But I also found it particularly raw and gritty in some cry about wives and beg for their lives, some curse, some spit, didn't give a hoot, I'll pull the trigger and shoot, notch up another hit, then got in the car, dumped their bodies afar, singing drunk, and there's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way back home. It kind of makes me think of that really first, not the first, but that one really well-known serial killer, what was her name, Arlene or something like that? She was the one who picked up the hitchhiking men, or, you know, like, or she would be the hitchhiker, I can't remember. But anyways, she was like back in the, like, 70s or 80s.
She was,
you know who
prosy.
I'm talking about?
She was a prosy who killed her tricks.
Yes, that's it. I knew sex was involved with that.
Eileen Warnock.
That's it. Yes. Kind of made me think of her. But it seems like a lot of times when throughout history, when you see female serial killers, well, a lot of serial killers, there's oftentimes a psychological component in, you know, the abuse that they experienced as a child, either, you know, physical or sexual, and that being turned down this path of blood and revenge and just an absolute, you can just feel within this performance the disgust that this character has for people, especially for men. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Nice. This reminds me of a movie called Terminal. It's all about a train station, always on the graveyard shift. And it starts out with a woman being a waitress, but she molds into different parts along in the movie. And it doesn't get revealed to the end. She's twins who are on a murderous rampage, taking care of people that have done them wrong in life, so to speak. And it does start with the one who had them at childhood, but also the man who murdered their mother, in fact, burned her to death. So it walks this very same tone of how you get into that mold of walking a particular path in vengeance and then making that vengeance birth itself as you drive everybody into each other and then take them out one by one, because they're too busy thinking of everything else is going on and not noticing that she has planned it all just the way it unfolds, bit by bit by bit. And the funny thing about the back angle of this, because they didn't get caught in the movie, but she does offer up that note of the preacher. And where it all starts off is in a confession booth. Target of remission, he's not a priest, but he does offer up a few parts of himself. He's the top dude who lends out the hits on people. And she starts out, hey, I want in and I want all of your business. And she wraps him around his finger, so to speak, by getting all these other people out of the way first before it comes right back to him. So I like it on that note. Thank you, Selena.
Very cool. All right. And up next we have And Who's to Say by Liquid Mind Forever. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
All right. Let's see. And Who's to Say by Liquid Mind Forever. Liquid took, don't waste your death on a half-assed life. And who's to say if and how I played, if disarrayed and how I parlayed, disobeyed, held on in the fray, splayed, okayed, allayed, made in the shade. And who brags they're not afraid of anything brings a broken string in their particular, peculiar about death and dying while crying is a fucking liar. Who prays day after day to die is already among the ectoplasmic inhabitants of gaseous weedoms, farting their way into the condoms of birth or death control, a freakazoid deployed by Ukrainian diplomats, fat cats, to say they're in control. And who's to say how I work out my karma, dharma, from a co-op for assholes? Moles dig deep into the blackness of dirt and come out into the toilet sewage. Do you say there's a right and a wrong of Qigong, a morbid, harmful song, belongs among the ashes of asses wiped with tripe night? Waste. Did you ever say nothing's a waste and then live to forget a life of cruel soul foolery? While your drool is running out both sides like the waste spewed from the hole in your face? Don't waste, then you'll want not. Do you believe this shit? Waste not, want not. We die the second we drop out of mama's womb, and the placental waste carries the taste of homelessness. Is that not some kind of waste? And boom. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. And as always, a powerful write by Liquid Mind Forever. Raw, gritty lines, an amazing vignette. Again, I like how in the third part she has the lines that stagger. It makes me think of the saying, a mind is a horrible thing to waste, or a waste is a horrible thing to mind, or something like that. But, I thought this really had powerful imagery and metaphors and hard-hitting lines. And I like how it speaks on wasting life on spewing those empty thoughts, and more important, on how you waste your own life on those, you know, people with their half-assed thoughts, with just basically, like, you know, shit coming out of their mouths and nothing good to say. So don't waste, then you'll want not. Do you believe this shit? Waste not, want not. And I like the wordplay of spelling want not, like K-N-O-T-S, with the idea of getting all tied up in a knot. We die the second we drop out of mama's womb, and the placental waste carries a taste of homelessness. Is that not some kind of taste? The whole thought that we are headed for death the moment we are born. In fact, the moment we are conceived, we are headed to death. And really, in the grand scheme of things, our life, whether we live, you know, like, you know, a few days or 107 years, is just the blink of an eye compared with the whole lifetime of the universe. And in that short amount of time, you know, what are we going to do with that, our life? Are we going to waste it on the kind of people that bring, you know, nothing but shallowness to our own lives? I also really like that second part where it says, who prays day after day to die is already among the ectoplasmic inhabitants of gaseous weedums, farting their way into the condoms of birth or death control, a freakazoid deployed by Ukrainian diplomats, fat cats who like to say they're in control. You know, it's strong lines on the whole idea of it's the rich and the fat cats that control the wars and the political agendas. So great lines all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right, Liquid hits on a note of waste, who prays day after day to die is already among the ectoplasmic inhabitants of gaseous weedums, forcing their way into the condoms of birth or death control, a freakazoid deployed by Ukrainian diplomats, fat cats who like to say they're in control. The idea that you can actually, if you're already on that note of praying to die, so to speak, or praying to live, then you've already wasted the angle of life to begin with. And she hits on a number of things. And who's to say how I work out my karma, dharma, from a co-op for assholes? The idea of why should I be listening to these idiots who know nothing in the moment except the shite that spews from their own mouths. And she does offer up that mode, like the waste spew from the hole in your face. I like that thought. And the thing is, did you ever say nothing's a waste? Who will get a life of cruel Sewell foolery? I like that note with Sewell, the guy who purchased Alaska back in the day. They called it Sewell's Folly. But somewhere down the line, it did turn out pretty good, as there was gold found up there, and the Yukon became a hit later on, and also the oil from past that. And then offering up, you offer up stupidity from the hole in your face. Somewhere down the line, it comes back to slap you back with it. And I did like that. We die the second we drop out of mama's womb, and the placental waste carries the taste of homelessness. Is that not some kind of waste? there is a quiet note for that. There's a lot of societies that take the placenta and they'll put it in the ground and then place a fresh new tree above it, so it reaps the benefit of the nutrients found in the placenta at that moment to make the tree grow big and strong, representation of that life. And does walk that note of if you're busy wasting your time wondering about death, death comes easy and quickly to those who spend their time on the note of death. Because death comes to us all. It doesn't matter when or where or how, just that it does. And if you spend your time thinking about death, then it comes a hell of a lot quicker than if you just lived your life and when death came, it came at its proper moment, then and there, not where you figured it might. So nicely done, Liquid. Thank you very much. All right.
So which, very great comment there, Rex. Is it the Italians who make the placenta soup get their husband to be lustfully interested in them? I'm trying to remember. I remember reading before about how, about placenta soup. And there's this one culture or nationality, there actually might be more than one, but you eat it and your husband's supposed to desire you greatly. I mean, I'm sure there's other reasons to eat it too, but.
Let's see. Central India, women of the Khoi tribe. What else we got here? We have buried them, burned them, and sold them as medicine to other people. apparently, it's used for a number of things. I mean, some Icelandic and Balinese cultures see the placenta as a child's guardian angel. There are plenty of nutrients in it, so it hasn't been written down that people eat it, but it has been known from time to time. And I even got a question here. Did one of the Kardashians eat their placenta?
Oh, God, that's a scary thought. Yeah, well, according to this one article I'm taking a quick glance at, is many women actually opt to consume their own placenta for postpartum recovery purpose.
Yes, but you won't find them. Most people won't admit to it.
Yeah, probably not. I never tried it myself, and I probably, even if I had known about it, I can tell you that I would definitely find an easier way to get a man to be interested in me than consuming feeding him placenta. So, interesting stuff, that's for sure. But,
take the placenta and bury it in the four corners of the tribe's reservation as a binder to ancestral land. The Maoris in New Zealand have the same tradition, burying the placenta within naked soil. And the Aymara Quechua people believe the placenta has its own spirit. It has to be washed, buried by the husband in a secret and shady place. And if this ritual is not performed correctly, they believe the mother or baby may become very sick or even die.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I did not know that stuff. Very cool. Learned something new there. All right. Well, up next, we have A Last Dance for the World by Hat. I am pissed off from circus artistry of mainstream media, which brainwash us of street saviors yelling into microphones about doomsday while ignoring the homeless. I'm fed up of politicians and other fools who ask me if I knew what's going on abroad while they are blind in my homeland. I don't give a fuck your fundraising for the purchase of a tank for Ukraine when Slovakian pensioners don't have pensions for basic food and medicine. Aches me being sad because of simply being. Around midnight in the pub, occupied by scrawny poets and muscular owners of private guns, in the mixture of alcohol, adrenaline, tattoos, and hormones, accompanied by accordion and Russian vodka, yelling, "To whom the bell tolls, everyone dances it, the last dance with death, we slowly allow to be deleted out from the living." My grandpa told me, body should head to coffin as used and spoiled by rebellious and passionate, but don't harm others. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Hatch took Don't Waste Your Death on Half-Assed Life and Life Was Full of Surprises with Too Many Bruises and Not Enough Band-Aids. I like the note of passion she's gotten this. I'm pissed off in the circus artistry of mainstream media, which brainwashes. Not enough people admitting that these days. Of street saviors yelling into microphones about doomsday while ignoring the homeless. Again, truth in that. I've set up petitions and other fools who ask me if I knew what's going on abroad while they are blind in my homeland. Again, hard notes to truth. And I had to wonder about the IDGAF, and then I realized, oh, I don't give a fuck. Your son raising for the purchase of a tank for Ukraine when Slovakian pensioners don't have pensions for basic food and medicine. Oof. All of that's truth. I mean, we think it's just a singularity over here, but it walks across the globe. In Eastern Europe, Western Europe, over here, down under, up above us, it doesn't matter. There are plenty of people suffering. And then that note, around midnight in the pub, occupied by scrawny poets and muscular owners of private guns in a mixture of alcohol, adrenaline, tattoos, and hormones, accompanied by accordion and Russian vodka, yelling, "To whom the bell tolls." Damn. And then the note, the last two stanzas. Everyone dances at the last dance of death. We slowly allow to be deleted out from the living. Correct. And I like that note on the end of my grandpa told me, body should head to coffin as used and spoiled. That does walk nicely with that life was full of surprises and too many bruises and not enough band-aids. Being rebellious, passionate, but don't harm others. Nice there, Hats. I like this. Strong. All right, Pam, what about you?
Oh, this is, yeah, definitely a strong right. It's one of those stand on your soapbox and, you know, shout into the bullhorn type right that need to be written. I mean, you know, when a poem starts out with, I am pissed off, it's going to have some strong lines that are just perfect for an after midnight show. I didn't stop to think that maybe I should have just said IDGAF. I'm not sure if Pat actually wanted that said, but that's just how it came out. But yeah, I mean, it's so freaking difficult. I mean, the mainstream media plays the sides they want to play. They tell the stories they want to tell. They distract, basically. I mean, well, this has amazing imagery and metaphors throughout, a strong voice, hard-hitting line, and it really is a powerful right on the way media tries to distract people's attention from the fact that local issues and in so many places, I mean, where in the United States, in Slovakia. I mean, you can even, you know, read the comment by Spider Racer, which I won't read the comment, but if you check out what he has to say about where he lives in Australia, you know, how much money they, in well, I'll just say he says in his, that Australia's contribution to Ukraine is around $790 million, while they still continue to have in Australia a major homeless crisis. You know, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't help those in need, but what happened to taking care of your own family first, you know, taking care of, you know, the people closest to you? And do they really think that people are this blind and this stupid not to see around the world that in these individual countries that their own aren't being taken care of, that the elderly, you know, being taken care of? You know, and I do have to say, I think Kat's grandpa sounds like a very wise man. And I agree, you know what? Be rebellious, be passionate, live life to the fullest, and just don't harm other people, you know? Enjoy that poetry, enjoy that music, but in the end, think about what your actions are doing to others, especially those closest to your home, you know, the country that you're supposed to be guiding, you know. But excellent write, and very well done.
All right. Where are we going next?
All right. Well, let's see here. Do-do-do-do-do. Speaking of hats, I haven't seen her in a while. Work must have her being kept pretty busy. All right. Well, up next we have Whispers of Love on the Swaying Bridge by Zulfikar Hamdam Awan. And go ahead there, Rex. Give it a read.
Whispers of Love on the Swaying Bridge by Zulfikar Hamdam Awan. Amidst the swaying bridge so fair, I'll sing to you, my heart laid bare, in my soul, a love so true. You're my melody, my world in you. With every swing, a dance we share, hearts entwined in the gentle air, whispers of love echo through. You're my song, forever anew. And boom. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, great read there, Rex. And this is a beautiful, heartfelt brevity. I love the imagery in this, the rhyme and the flow, the idea of the song of love that two people make together. You know, it has that feeling of a love that just feels fresh and new, and but like lasting also. I'll sing to you, my heart laid bare, in my soul, a love so true. You're my melody, my world in view. You know, I just thought those had a nice romanticism to them, and great lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That idea of a swaying bridge, there's a note to totality in a moment, because it holds itself between two edifices that are far away from each other. So it is a bridge that is used locally, well traveled, yet it does offer that note to danger, as also a note to the immortality in the moment, being free as that bridge sways itself, because you get that wind going back and forth. You're walking on wooden planks, yet there is something there in the moment which gives you a sense of freedom, and that's kind of where this goes, as well as the angle of love that is portrayed with every swing and dance we share, hearts entwined in the gentle air, whispers of love echo through. still my song forever new. That could be the note to just life itself, enjoying that singularity moment with the wind and the freedom in that swing itself, being alone out there, almost in limbo. Thank you very much, Lee.
Absolutely. Those swinging bridges are scary. I crossed one of those only once in my life, and it just, man, freaked me out. But, all right, let's see what we have next. The Scented Trail. Follow the Scented Trail by Dahl and McCubbard. Curiosity is one of my many demeanors. A trail of blood beckoned my hound's nose. First, I surmised we were just taking an enchanting early morning walk. Then my son's hound nose picked up a scent, an aroma of fresh spilled blood left the trail. We were somewhat intrigued to whether there had been yet another mourning spouse on halfway house murdered. Plenty of mad wives pulling the catch on toy guns. Toys only as grown men behave like boys, playing clueless Cluedo, a feisty detective game you might remember with Miss Scarlet as my favorite character on deck. Of get our toy guns loaded over my neck of the woods, it's happening every day. Women kicking their spouses out the backyard. Windows were jumped from by runaway wives. We're running from men with real toys. We're all giving up hopes at finding a cowboy in the UK. Consequently, blood trails left our hound's wagging tail flip back round to pick up. Where was this bloody trail leading? Upon its freshly laid appearance, not old or stale, one raised one's eyebrow as to how many hours the fleshy remains of the other end, human or animal, has been dead and dormant. Unfortunately, the trail led uphill way past my local haunted house. We've already conversed with those ghosts who have stuck up a deal with us in ghostly fashion. That's our midnight time, though. Those ghosts don't wake till the midnight bell rings, so we can escape entering to liaise with the dead there till tonight. Meanwhile, what's going on with this bloody trail? The hound's determined to uncover its source, as I'm now hooked with intrigue. We might uncover last night's latest murder. Wouldn't that be exciting to send to the press? Although they're running out of space for murder charges. In the bag of scents, I balance myself. We follow on as bloody trails continue to grow in directions of off-beating paths of usual ordnance survey maps. Onto boats tied up on long, deep anchors, seeming to be a sailor sitting covered in blood, but none the weary. Chuckling, in fact, with a joyful laugh, none bothered by blood either. As we struggled to get on board for the welcome, for he welcomed us with hot tea, toasted bread, alongside his triumphant smile, we stepped on board seeing a dead shark. So no wonder he was chuckling. Let's enjoy our morning toast, staring at the shark. End poem.
Greatly, Pam. Thank you very much. It's a hell of a story. I like the opening up. Curiosity is one of my demeanors. A trail of blood beckoned my hound's nose. Finally, I surmised we were just taking an enchanting early morning walk. Then my son's hound's fierce nose picked up a scented and aroma of fresh spilt blood left a trail. Okay, intriguing, to say the least. And I like that note to a clue. Miss Scarlet. I got to offer up that extra note of blood with Miss Scarlet being the character she loves to play in. But just still up with the women kicking us back in the backyard. Windows were jumped from runaway wives. We're running from men and realtors. We've all given up hope at finding a cowboy in UK. Consequently, blood trails left our hounds wagging tails, slipped back round to pick up. Where was the bloody trail leading? That note, finding a cowboy in UK, boy, it kind of hits on the idea of we got plenty of betas, but there ain't no alphas lurking around until she comes, that one on the back end of this, the sailor covered in blood. And he's covered in blood because he's caught himself a shark. And apparently, well, they've got sharks swimming up the Thames these days. So, hey, shark steaks are really good. I toast that morning as well because there'd be some good eating for lunch or dinner. I like this. Something a little different. Thank you, Dom. And Pam, what do you think?
Does shark taste like chicken?
No. It's a nice, it's a firm meat, so it grills well outside on a barbecue.
Oh, cool. Cool. I figured sharks aren't technically fish, or are they a fish?
Yeah.
I guess they are. Oh, they are. Okay. Huh. Sounds interesting. Yeah, this definitely was an intriguing write. I did like the how she brought us along on this grand chase, these two hounds smelling blood and trying to figure out where the trail ends. And then the twist at the end was nice. I did like the reference to the game, too. That was great. Women kicking their spouses out the backyard. That line there that made me think of, and the lines just before us, over my neck of the woods, it's happening every day, women kicking their houses out the backyard, makes me think of hunting season. And, obviously there's women that hunt too, but, you know, yeah, you just get this picture of hunting season with the women staying home and the men all going off in groups to the hunting cabins to act like, you know, boys and do their manly hunting. The end part made me think of the movie Jaws. But that was interesting to read in her AN where she says sharks are now entering the River Thames due to warming waters with more fish to eat. So excellent write and very well done.
All right. What's up next?
All right. Gonna grab the next one and do all right. Up next, we have Santi and Primo, short version by Theo. And go ahead, Rex.
Santi and Primo, short version by Theo. Robbie worked at a small center. No padding for the plump look, just fat as a pig. Too many pink wafers, too much digitalis. Worked at the Humbert Plaza down in the town center and was a Jew. Seasonal job, he didn't make much for it. College debt, wanted to be a botanist. Had dreams, the snow coagulated on the roof. Two bedrooms, shared with his sister Esther, no openable windows, just hatches with cage wire outside like you see in prison. A couple of years ago, he assumed a small loan of $3,000 to pay off his old Corolla. Didn't think much of it till he still didn't have the money. Thought, fuck it, I'm just up and left. Moved to a different state, shaved his eyebrows, loaned the money from a guy named Primo. He was skinny, the fish, soon to be moved to the same area by coincidence. Could only afford those mackerel tins. Wife, who used to be a prostitute, claimed Latina, but just had fake tan, spoke in a Honduran accent. When he was a kid, he said he wanted to be a comedian. Some joke, he had accumulated a sizable amount of debt fueling his cocaine addiction, lived behind an overdue retirement home. One night, Prima Sorum drove till the sun started cutting through the monsoon of dirty clouds with his shotgun, hunting rifle, buckshot pellets, laughing his head off, drove around all night just searching. Ambulances couldn't tell if they were sirens or saxophones. Didn't matter. He had put coke up his ass earlier. He knew Robbie worked in the plaza, saw him on a poster, went in, laid down in the middle of the mall next to the big plastic Christmas tree and a shotgun. Might as well be the Tower of Babel. The LED shone on his face, looked like some holy angel. The police found Primo dead the next morning, laying in sewage water. He didn't smell of fish anymore. Said he'd been hallucinating and just wandered. He was butt naked. Robbie died a couple of years later from diabetes. The world had failed them both. End poem. All right. There's something about spending Christmas alone, naked, sitting by the Christmas tree, gripping a shotgun that lets you know your life is spinning dangerously out of control.
I thought this was a great take. I thought this was a great take on the chosen prompt. Really, it had excellent dark humor, just gritty lines, a wonderful story, right, on lives that did not go as planned. We have basically two suicidal people killing themselves in different ways. The one person chooses the faster method, method. You know, the addiction, like cocaine, crack, that kills faster, then, of course, you know, where it says lay down in the middle of the mall next to a big plastic Christmas tree and a shotgun. And then the other person is just as much suicidal, but they do it in a long-term way. They just don't give a fuck about their health. You know, they just they eat what they want. They don't bother to take care of themselves. They're heading to an early grave. I really loved the wit and the irony and the dark humor. You know, especially, you know, in the beginning where he says, Robbie worked as a mall Santa, worked at the Humbert Plaza down in the town center and was a Jew, seasonal job. He didn't make much for it, college debt, wanted to be a botanist, had dreams. You know, the snow coagulated on the roof. Wonderful lines and the irony of a Jewish man who had great big dreams trying to fill that addiction for food and for life by playing Santa part time, and then how these two guys' lives kind of like intertwine and yet stay separate. It reminds me of a scene from, not an exact scene, but it makes me think of the movie Pulp Fiction by Quentin Tarantino. Like how that was like in like little bits and pieces, and there was all these characters that had separate stories and yet connected. So it very much had a Quentin Tarantino type vibe to it that I really enjoyed. Excellent write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. Robbie, the mall Santa, didn't need the padding, just fat as a pig. Seasonal job. He didn't make much for it. College debt, that hits quite a bit. Wanted to be a botanist. Had dreams. The snow coagulated on his head. So this is later on in life. He's already gotten to the point where he's graying. So he's already missed out on his dreams. He's still living in a place with his sister, Esther. It's on that note of being almost in prison. Borrows money, to pair up his Corolla. Didn't think much of it till he still didn't have the money, the idea of reaching that age and saying, the hell with everything, and sprinting out. But I did like this move to a different state, shaved his eyebrows. That was a funny note. It had me thinking of Take a Walk on the Wild Side from way back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I could see that.
Just standing there going cross country, shaving eyebrows, putting on a wig, and he was a she, so to speak. A tale of walking a different range. Then he loaned money then he took another loan from a guy named Primo. Okay. Then we get into Primo's story. So you got the one frame of Robbie up front, right down to the introduction of Primo, who lent him money to smell a fish. But he's always didn't have money, so all he could afford was mackerel, tins of mackerel. Yeah, that might explain the fish smell. Married to a former pro. Claimed to be Latina, but was spoken a Honduran accent. That was a touch funny. He wanted to be a comedian. Some jokes. He had accumulated a sizable amount of debt fueling his cocaine addiction. And I guess there's the second issue, life rolling into this one. And then you get this note. One night, Primo saw him, referring to Robbie, and drove around with a boatload of guns and ammunition, laughing his head off, searching for Robbie. Noting that, the idea, then he hits on the idea of both their deaths. Primo's so high that he actually goes out, walks around naked, and falls down, lies down, or just ends up in a small pool of water found the next day, so to speak. That's kind of funky. And a couple of years later, Robbie dies from diabetes. So the issue of you can't run from your problems because your problems catch up with you, whether it's the cocaine or the addiction on one angle with Primo, but also the addiction on the other angle with Robbie. He was already fat, already had a sugar problem with himself being of fat. So he dies of diabetes. So in the end, they couldn't run from their problems, but their problems actually caught up with them in the end. I like the moral in that angle. Nice, Theo. Thank you very much. That was different.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Up next, I Know We Ain't Even Friends, So It's a Fact There's No Love by Crystal 812. We're not meant to be, it's clear as day, yet my heart yearns for you come what may. I agree that we're not friends, it's true, but why do I still feel this pull to you? Our paths may cross, my heart may ache, but I'll keep my distance for friendship's sake. If we meet on the streets, don't hold me tight, just a simple handshake will be all right. And if someone else is by your side, just smile from afar, let your feelings hide. But that smile of yours, let it not reveal the secrets and emotions that we both conceal. Don't let your eyes betray our untold tale, the truth we hide like a ship set to sail. I agree that we're not friends, I swear. Take the flowers, turn them into air. If my name slips from your lips, say it's a mistake. Don't let it bother you for both our sakes. But that mistake, let it not bring you pain. For in my heart, it's a love I can't feign. If you sleep like me with restless dreams, know that we're not friends, or so it seems. Though we may agree, it's hard to pretend that our bond is purely an amicable bend. End poem.
Thank you very much. This was another thought, something a little different. The idea of holding out on something, but yet there's still something there. This is a note of friends, but it can never go any further than that because of were what didn't occur, but wanted to occur on one end, but didn't on the other end because the other end already had something going. It's kind of a, a twisted bite at how things can get muddled and muddied in the moment because even though nothing's happened and they're not admitting to being friends, it's kind of a hard shake at the notion of what could have been, so to speak. You got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, it's a great write, a wonderful rhyme, emotive lines. I'm a little confused how it got on the board because it's not actually in the contest and it doesn't have any of our prompts in the AN, but...
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, it is a good poem.
Wait a minute. How did that... Because I know, I thought I saw, wait a minute.
I don't know. All I know is that it was on your board and you put it there. So I figured, well, maybe she sent it to you by private message and, you know, you just thought, well, hey, that works. Works for me. But, I really thought this was an emotional, heartfelt write on realizing that you have to keep your distance from somebody because the feelings you have for them can't be expressed because, you know, they're in a relationship with somebody else. So heartfelt right and very well done.
Well, it's funky. I don't know how that one got here, but there is one in the contest. I knew there was.
Yeah.
So
I
don't exactly know where that one came from.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
because I do have one of the contests from her. So now I'm confused as to how did I get that one?
Maybe
when I get this one.
Well, okay. Well, my apologies if we read the wrong one. We still have time if you want to put up the right one from her.
Yeah.
The one from the content.
All right.
Great and late night poets.
Okay.
All right.
I wish I was in beside you. Okay.
This one I remember now seeing in the contest. Okay. I wish I was the one beside you by Crystal 812. In a silent corner, I quietly pine, longing to be next to you so divine. Together we chase the morning sun, creating memories one by one. But I am not the one beside you. How I wish it were me, but it's not. It's true. Whether you're mine or not doesn't matter at all. Your happiness is what truly enthralls. From a distance, I smile with utmost devotion, admiring you selflessly with pure emotion. Whether you know of my love or not, it matters not, for my feelings will not rot. End poem.
Great, Pam. Kind of, this reads almost as the prequel to the last one. So I'm still kind of wondering where the hell did I get the last one? How strange. And the fact that ended up on the board and this one didn't, which is even stranger. Okay.
I know, right? I'm sorry that.
Well, this does walk that angle of keeping it all these stuff because fear, maybe? Or... because there is that note from a distance, I smile with utmost devotion, admiring her selflessly with pure emotion. Whether you know of my love or not, it matters not, my feelings will not rot. So, if I want that idea of there is something, maybe they know each other a little bit, but they're not more friends than just an acquaintance or somebody you see at the same place day after day because it coincides with your scheduling. And she's holding the candle and hasn't had the courage to actually offer up something in the moment, but still pines anyway because she can't or won't take that first step to maybe the fear is of rejection. Don't know, but that is what
it is. Well, and the thing is rejection is a scary thing to face. That is for sure. There definitely is a similar message and similar tone to both poems. But I will say that I think the first one was the idea of where the pain is still really fresh and you're really hurting and you're hoping that something happens. And this one is kind of I feel like this poem here has more of a mature voice, more of an acceptance. The whole idea of knowing that somebody's not for you and that they're not going to return your love, same time always wanting the best for them, you know, of having that unrequited love, but understanding that, you know, what you truly want is what makes them happy. So wonderful, right? And very well done. And great show tonight, Rex.
Oh, yeah, we are at the back end to close. All right, I think we've got like 8 rights left. I'm going to move them to next week, this time, again next week. So I'll resend a message out to those who didn't get read tonight. They will be read first thing next Tuesday morning. And great show, Pam. Thanks for sitting in, Randy, for a little bit. And for Robbie, Christina, and Jeremy on the boards. Y'all were wonderful. So thank you very much. We'll see you all again next Tuesday morning.